Okay. So we're that's by the way, welcome to Enlightened Radio, the Recovery Radio program. My name is John Case. The host here is James Boyd, who's dialing in from the great state of New Jersey, home of former Governor Chris Christie.
yes, that's very interesting. Our very own.
Now a candidate for president, the remedy to Trump.
So he's no longer the, we're going to say not the candidate, but he's the canon.
He's the yeah, right.
Or maybe he's the canon candidate, if I may.
I don't know who'd be worse, Trump or Chris Christie, but.
But we're going to start this show on a good note, John. How about that?
Good
morning, everybody. I am James Boyd, and I am co-hosting this section of this podcast on Enlightened Radio, but this is Recovery Radio, and we talk all things, economics, recovery, and what have you. Good morning, John. How are you?
Well, I'm good.
Beautiful.
By the way, let me note that you can access the radio program here via www.enlightenradio.org. And if you are using your cell phone or something to access it, you want to hear us, you should go to player.enlightenradio.org, because for some reason on the small screen, the web page comes up, but the player, you got to go, pluck around to find it. So just go to player.enlightenradio.org and you'll be able to hear us. And also all of our former podcasts, or most of them, are on podcasts.enlightenradio.org. So just that little info here. And we're broadcasting weekly, 7 o'clock in the morning. I got a little problem, James, with my Labor Beat show, because I'm having a hard time getting JB to get up at 7.
Yeah.
Talk about retail. I have to ping him.
It's 7 o'clock. I'm 7 o'clock. I'm usually up. I'm already.
Yeah, me
my
too.
First
but
cup of coffee.
He sleeps till 9. And anyway, welcome. I'm glad to see you. I wish you were still down here in West Virginia, although a lot of people are leaving West Virginia. Apparently, we just lost a congressman, because of the
which congressman?
Well, we used to have 3. Now we have 2. Because we lost population. Looks like the Republic.
Population shrinking.
Yeah, people leave here. There's nothing to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, your kids can't. There's nothing to do. The coal mines aren't really hiring anymore. They pay good, but they don't not hiring anymore much. And the rest of it, if you're not part of the trades, like a skilled trade or something like that, forget it. And those programs.
That's interesting.
So they're leaving the state.
I love that area. The area is to be, it has so much potential to be cultivated. But, just like anything, if you don't use the right lubrication, it rusts, it closes, everything rusts, it's shut down. And so the forward progress has rusted.
That's a good metaphor. It's a good, you got a good.
If I may use another metaphor, the substance is still there. The earth is still there. The ground can be cultivated. And the infrastructure can be loosened, and I believe that I love the idea that my spirit tells me that that's part of my assignment. And Recovery Radio for me is a galvanizer, and I invite anybody who takes the time to join in or listen or comment or just access this information, radio podcast. And we can talk about galvanizing, cultivating the community. And those are the topics that I, and the politics is all connected, it's interconnected. I love the name of one entity in Charlestown, West Virginia, Full Circle Healing Center. You know, it's a people who are struggling with addiction of all kinds. And right now, there's an addiction, this mental illness is running rapid. I looked at a broadcast and some of the numbers around mental illness and then how the interconnectedness happens when you look at the numbers around opioid addiction and dysregulation, you know. I don't want to get off too much, John, into the weeds on that because I don't want to be too morbid. The sun is out. It's beautiful today. And the holistics something that we should savor. How are you, John? How are you going?
Well, I just, every day is gravy,
flowers?
Brother.
The flowers are up?
Oh, yes. I'd say Carol has been taking every available minute away from her work to go out and get the garden going, and we had a drought.
Anybody in that area? Oh, no, I'm not going to put it out there. I'm going to save it for myself. This guy has the most beautiful flowery yard when it's up to me.
It is, man.
You know,
it's
beautiful. I would on mornings, man, back in several years back. You know, I would pull in that driveway and just stand out there a few minutes and look at the flowers.
I know, man.
Every now and then, and then the red caboose in the backyard.
Yeah, right.
I felt so privileged. I felt like the, you know, how they must have felt when the great white hope was coming.
Did you know that when Carol negotiated buying this house, that it looked like it was going to cost a fortune because the caboose was like, you know, who has a caboose, right? And and I think I've told you before, it was owned by the former mayor of Harpers Ferry. And he, although he had passed away quite a while ago, and his wife, she was the gardener. She was the president of the Harpers Ferry Garden Club, to be truthful. And so we barely just trying to keep up the stuff that she did. And I don't know. I think, you know, West Virginia is in serious trouble. You know, there's no way to escape it.
And I want to give props to the visionaries there who have, it's really a uphill battle, but many of battles have been won with the troops having to go uphill. And I mean, yeah, it's not, John, you gave me a on that one. So, and I'm speaking historically because the idea is to invigorate the masses around progress, you know, sustainable progress that you can reach out and touch, you know, like that really good jar of jelly on a poor person's table, kitchen table.
I heard that.
You need to be able to reach out and get that, you know.
I heard that.
And I think that, I don't know, there's not enough people who are really willing to get into good trouble in West Virginia because they get beat back so often. You know, the Sammy Browns and
well, Sammy's doing okay. I mean, she got her, you know.
But I know my little sister. If West Virginia is not doing okay, Sammy's not doing okay.
Yeah, she's she's made a change. She's in the Air Force Reserves, and I think she. I don't know whether she's still going to go with her plan of trying to get to law school. via the army, but
and it seems like, and so the youth have to take over because Sammy was in her youth. She's still in her youth. I ain't gonna put her over here. Forgive me, little sister. I ain't talking like that. That's not what I'm saying. You're not by any means an unyouthful human person, but listen, you get. You lose your steam, you know. I mean, you can go a whole lot of rounds, right? But pretty soon you got to, somebody else got to get in the ring.
You know,
because fight. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, Fanny's storytelling avocation or her thing. I mean, she's hooked up with, you know, a lot of big organizations. Like, there's a thing called the Griot Circle, I believe. I think they're headquartered in, I don't know what it's, I can't remember whether it's Baltimore. I think it's Philadelphia. And because that's where she's from. And these are African American storyteller organization. And it's pretty good size of people that attend these big storytelling gigs around the country. You know, some of them call Tall Tales. Sometimes it's called a Liars Festival or something, you know. And, but it's a real community around the country, and it's gotten bigger. I'm not quite sure why storytelling as an art form has picked up, but it has. That's something you'd be good at, by the way. You know, if there was a group around there that would, that's what people meet, and then they learn, they sort of get the, you know, the performance thing down a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, Fanny has a thing where she basically throws her voice to impersonate either her grandfather or great-grandfather or her dad, you know. Not usually her mom. It's interesting. Yeah, it's been a real thing for her. And there's a lot of art. These people are, I mean, and I noticed her herself. I mean, now she was a student of mythology when she went to school when she was young. Mm-hmm. But, and so she's got a skill that where she incorporates mythologies of many different areas of the world, okay, and embeds them in a common story about her family or somebody else, right? And also you have this little bit of resonance, right? You know, like you take the... What was the goddess? I can't remember. There was one of the Greek or Sumerian gods, right? They had a daughter. The mother was the, you know, the goddess of fertility and the ability of the crops to grow, and the lord of the dead fell in love with her daughter, and kidnapped her and took her to Hades or hell or whatever, the other side of the river. and in response, the mother said, as long as you keep her, there'll be no, it'll be winter. And if you give her back, I'll give you back summer so you can grow something.
Yeah, hey, I would really like to do a reading for Fanny. I really would, just to see what she thinks about me. And I found a little poem. It's called Handfuls of Purpose.
Okay.
Poems by Fanny Crosby.
Crosby. Interesting.
Compiled by Stephen Ross. And here's the poem. Oh, what a happy soul I am. Although I cannot see, I am resolved that in this world, contented, I will be. How many blessings I enjoy that other people don't. To weep and sigh because I'm blind, I cannot, nor I won't. All the way my Savior leads me. What have I to ask besides? Can I doubt His tender mercy, who through life has been my guide. Heavenly peace, divinest comfort, here by faith in Him to dwell. For I know, whate'er befall me, Jesus doeth all things well. Jesus doeth all things well. Jesus, Savior, once betrayed, sacrifice for sinners made, wretched, lost, to thee I fly. Save, oh save me, or I die. Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. Heir of salvation, purchase of God, born of his spirit, washed in his blood. To God be the glory. Now, I'm not going to read this whole thing, but I just like to read for Fanny one day and see if we can kind of put together something that has that kind of impact. And if anybody else is interested in reading, I think that that's a great idea, John, to kind of develop, because I've always wanted to use my voice in a way that's impactful, because I think the ear gate and the audiology part and the vision is what propels a person into some sense of right thinking, how to feel right. It exaggerates the endorphins. And I like flowery language. I like language that has flowers.
Mm-hmm.
It has.
I got you.
And I think that people, it calms people too.
Yeah, I'm sure there are storyteller circles in Jersey, okay? And I'll bet you Fanny knows about them. Because the fun part of all this thing is getting involved. I was thinking of doing it myself if I didn't have all this time on this computer, but that would be fun. Everyone's got stories from their life, right? That are instructive to themselves. That's why they remember the story. There's something in it that speaks to them. You know, an incident in their life that they was a turning point or an illumination or a tragedy of some sort that raised a question that you had not asked before. Anyway, the group helps people. You see how other people kind of do it, you know, and then you sort of get a sense of what you could do, and
you have somebody just like in music, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's like a recovery cafe, like the thing. You sort of pick up on people, and some people, of course, are really good at it. That means they've been practicing telling lies forever, and they tell another one for you, you know. But
I think that would be a pretty good story.
it would. That's right. Tell a big lie, you know.
See who can tell. Yeah, see who can make up the biggest lie. Come on, y'all. And rate them. Real rate. You get a five.
You get a five. Yeah, seven, you know. Yeah. Damn, that lie was great. I believed it.
And then we got to have a guy with a book on his side.
that's right. Yeah.
Anyway. Hey, what do you think about the current state of affairs in the big arena, which is Washington, D.C.? And I think Florida has become this hotbed of
something.
Indecisiveness. Everybody's just run amok. So, I mean, to me, we can talk about that, have that subject, and
How about the banned books? You know, I can't think of a better way to get people to go out and buy a book than to ban it. Okay? I mean, when I was a teenager, someone said, hey, you know, that book is banned. I think it was, you know, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn or To Kill a Mockingbird, right? You know, the one.
They banned it?
In Florida, yeah. In Texas. They banned 300 books.
To Kill a Mockingbird was one of them.
Oh yeah, sure. You know, there's no. We can't have books about racial. Why can't we have no books about slavery? Because why do we want to demean our country by talking about all that? I mean, these guys, they're unbelievable. But anyway, I can't think of when you do that. I remember when I was a kid, they removed The Catcher in the Rye, a book by J.D. Salinger, because it talked about, you know, a teenager's struggles with
They're fondling himself or something.
Something. It had some sex in it. There was somebody had written, you know, F-U on a sign. And it raised, oh, we can't have that word. And they tried to ban the book. Well, I immediately went out and got it.
But they didn't know that Fanny Stormy Daniels was going to be hanging out with the president 25 years later, right?
Yeah, right. They don't care about that. Apparently, that doesn't matter.
Is it? So there's two sets of rules going on. That's what I'm saying. We have to take a look at that.
Anyway, the banned books, you know, ban a book. I can tell you right now, 10,000 more people than had never thought about reading it will go out and read it now, okay? So I don't see the point of it myself, even if you're one of those guys that thinks that we ought to ban everything that doesn't, you know, conform with some right-wing white man's fantasy or something, you know. But but they do it. And sometimes I think it's almost like a deliberate distraction. I think some of the stuff around Trump is a distraction. Like I have friends like my friend Mike, you know, and it's other people that they are just obsessed with every single piece of news about them trying to put Trump in prison. And I don't have any problem with putting him in prison, but I do have a problem with the entire narrative of politics for the next year and a half being prosecuting one man, Trump. Okay. And
it's been like that for 6 years, I believe.
Yeah, that's all we talk about is who's going to get him? Is Jack Smith going to nail him? Is this guy going to get him? You know, and he's sitting there. I'll say one thing about Trump. You know, I mean, that guy doesn't back up. Okay, I mean, when he's attacked,
he don't retreat.
Okay, and you know, I mean, he's a piece of shit. He's a fascist, whatever. And I would have never prosecuted him. I would have set somebody out to put him down.
Hey, Trump is—he's punching drunk.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but you're gonna—he's
punching drunk because he's taking shots in the head. You know what I mean? But he counters. So he counters like he, and he, but he ain't slipping punches. He's just a big head, hard head man that's taking a lot of hits to the head. To his psyche. I mean, boom, 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 boom. And he's taking combinations. Like, he got trials going on everywhere. Boom,
yeah,
boom, 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 boom. How?
It keeps him.
The head, he has a, what do you call it? TMI or something. What do you call it when football players?
Yeah, well, head injury. But it keeps him above the fold of the paper every freaking day, okay?
But how does it keep us?
Everybody else? Everybody that's got grievances, is like those trucker guys, you know, that I was talking to day before yesterday. Everybody that's pissed off about all the pressures, all this other stuff, they watch. They don't care. They see Trump come. They see Trump coming up, and they don't know who's their enemy and who's not. And so they here's a guy that doesn't take that. They throw everything about him. He dumps it right back at him. And they like that.
If he wants to make America great again,
well, that's
what is going to have to happen. The rules and stuff, you're going to have to go all the way back when he wasn't even here. Right.
You can't believe anything. it's just.
But here's my solution, Don. You remember how they did Hannibal Lecter?
Yes.
And roll him around everywhere in that big.
Yes, with that mask on so he wouldn't eat people.
Yeah. That's the only way they're going to save this guy's life.
All right. They should,
And that's the only way they're going to keep. He's like a virus that's spreading all everywhere.
In most of history, they would never have done that. Put him on trial, that makes him a headline. Most places, they'd have shot him. He disappeared. Really? They would have. I mean, why give him the stage, okay? I mean, I bet you right now Biden is regretting this.
I hope nobody sees that. Nobody.
Well, I'm sure you're now going to campaign for president, and the media is going to think the most important issue is putting Donald Trump in jail.
How about somebody everybody just did a turn smacking him. But that would be more like they did when they stoned people.
Well, you know.
So we ain't going to go back that far either. If he want to make America great again.
Oh, well, that's not going
to happen. We need to take him out into the square. And, you know, we don't want to really. I don't know, man. Nobody to die. I don't.
Well, they're he's using it all.
He's getting on my nerves.
As his campaign for president. And now it's going to go to this. It's some of it. Any federal charge, all the stuff this guy Jack Smith charged him with, that's going to end up at the Supreme Court. I don't think non-federal charges will probably, but he doesn't care. Look, after they went all those indictments, he gets out the next day and starts talking about how ugly Jack Smith's wife is. After they just charged him for that stuff in New York with the girl, with the woman that he, and
that's what the pimps. He should get Jack Smith should be able to go and just smack the hell out of that man for saying something about his wife like that in public. I mean, that's what Will Smith did.
Yes, that's true. That's what Will did.
Hey, man, and let it go. And let it go, you know. But he can't come on stage like that no more. And Donald Trump keeps coming on stage because anybody smacked him.
No, yeah. Well, they're trying to smack him, but I think it's tough. You got ex-presidents or presidents or kings. You can't... it's like the French and the English and everybody else found out.
Thought you were going to say a French tickler.
No, a French king. Like they couldn't figure out a way to get rid of him without killing him. But they couldn't. I mean,
take it off and put it in the trash.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know what they're going to do. I think Biden has shown himself to be, I mean, he's doing some good things. He's got some legislation through. He got the debt limit past that he did a low drama kind of approach, right? You know, he kept his mouth shut about it pretty much, and then let the deal, he got some kind of deal. It wasn't the great deal. But it was better than most people expected. The problem is he's 80 years old, and nobody knows whether he's even going to make it to the election or not. You know, I mean, he probably will. If he does, he'll probably win. Because I don't think most people are going to go for Trump, which makes me ask questions about what is the whole thing going on in the Republican Party, and what is really going to happen, and why is Joe Manchin, and a couple of other guys, by the way, also flirting with this running as an independent. For president kind of thing. Manchin's associated with this outfit called No Labels, which is trying to find a moderate, Republican, whatever, or Democrat like Joe Manchin wants to marry a Republican, so like whatever. And do what with them? Defeat, that would be as an alternative to Biden, right? Because I don't think Trump can win the presidency unless the Democrats have a very weak candidate or somebody unknown like that. I don't think he can. If Biden stays reasonably healthy, I don't think Trump can beat him.
Well, I think there are more Americans who are not going to have the kind of life in the future that we've had in the past. So, and that's not to say not to worry. I wouldn't be so cliched. I won't say that. And I wouldn't be, just so presumptive like to say not to worry, because people will lag behind. But my concern right now at this point is, the anxiety level that is being so amped up, and when it hits, when it boils over, it's going to be a small percentage of the country that's going to hit it's going to, you know, lose the most in terms of humans and life and resources. And, you know, you're going to have this kind of history that talks about the time when anxiety hit, like when it boiled over at the White House.
Right.
And so that's the sad, that's the downside of it, that, you know, it's inevitable, it seems. But who is the greatest knower of stuff like that? And so,
I don't know.
So, you know, just for today, all those who are struggling with any sort of addiction challenges, people who can't, or so dysregulated, can't pay their bills, or children are in prison, you know, food is not on the table, you're working yourself to the bone,
yeah,
where your fingernails appear like the person that you were talking about, John. I mean, and all of that is stuff that's the underlying. And, you know, we go about our business, you know, I mean, it's just a picture of America that's dire. It seems more dire, but it's better than it was, because now we know a lot more and we're able to have a more conversations. There are more blueprints available to be able to help people, you know, get out of some of the dilemmas that they're in, some of the ways that suicide comes in. You know, it creeps in. We can't see it, you know, and it shows up in our babies. And there's so much availability for consumers to get their hands on the wrong kinds of goods and services all over the place. And they're creating more avenues to have this input, this channel, you know, into the behaviors of people and how, you know, you collectively keep people ignorant. And we don't talk about that. And it can be, I mean, science has proven, you know, to manipulate the population is kind of a staple.
Yeah.
It's a staple in control.
Right.
And you have to put that staple in there. But unfortunately, the staple goes into the skin parts of people of color.
You know, sure does.
Staple in your, yeah. You gotta walk around the rest of your life with the staple in your thumb.
That's right.
And that is part, right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And everybody else is able to use that thumb, you know, people of different colors, people have different paint jobs, or you know, and that same staple gets extracted just a little bit if you're a very light-skinned person of color, and you become something else. You know, I'm not being judgmental about anything. I'm just talking about, you know, some of the apparatus that is used in this country that is not well known, because people don't have time to even explore that. We give that over to the scientists and the doctors and the, you know, we don't consume that kind of information on a huge scale, because we rely on others to do it. And well, unfortunately, some of the feedback we get, it's impersonal. And so if it's so impersonal, we can't use it.
Well, there's most people think that experts, you know, there's some people that think that experts will save us, and that's not true. You know, the experts can think of all kinds of cool solutions to things that leave people behind, even if they don't intend to. And, you know, it's like the new AI, all the apprehensions about artificial intelligence and this so-called unsupervised or what they call it, generative AI, which really just means the machine learning algorithms that they use in that thing are, they use their own, that they've, it's hard to explain this if you don't do computer science, but they figured out a way so that if you want a computer to recognize an image like a cat and say, oh, that's a cat, okay, mm-hmm. It doesn't work to give it a million images of cats and expect that it will ever really have any idea what a cat is, okay? It doesn't think about it as a cat. The only way that a computer can think about an image is in terms of pixels, okay? Because mm-hmm. that's its unit of assembly, thought, construction. I mean, when it's writing a picture on the screen for you, it's writing, you know, a color for each pixel, right? And how does it know that one set of pixels has anything to do with another? Okay, so the way that it does it is that it takes each individual pixel, okay, from, let's say you've given it a set of pictures of cats, okay, and you say, okay, I'm going to give you a new picture now, and you tell me if it's a cat or not, okay? And so what it does is it doesn't take the whole picture, the cat part, because even the picture it has of a cat is of a cat sitting on a table or a chair or in a cat box or whatever, you know? And and so what it does is it goes pixel by pixel and decides which pixels are nearer to it, the ones, the adjacent pixels. And it does a comparison pixel by pixel by pixel of you know, and it does its own classification system in a way. Okay, this could be a cat, that's likely not a cat. Da, 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 da. It goes all the way through and it comes out with an answer and says, this is a cat. And you say, no, you made a mistake, that's not a cat. Okay, so, oh, it says, okay, so now it has, it exercises a feedback loop. It says, you've told me that I'm in error. This is called supervised AI, right? I made a mistake, okay? It takes that error and it feeds it back and it says, okay, I must have weighted all the inputs, all the individual pixels as being part of a cat or not part of a cat, okay? I must have made a mistake, okay? And it goes back and it makes an adjustment in how it weights the inputs, right? I should have weighted this input stronger than that put, okay? Because you've told me there's an error. It goes back, it recomputes, okay? Comes back again, and the maybe you've set a standard. It has to be, you know, is it a cat? You say, no, it's not a cat. Okay, it does it again. Over and over again, it keeps changing the weights, okay? The weights of one set of pixels versus another, what's more likely to be in a cat, what's less likely to be in a cat. And it does that over and over and over again. And finally, you know, if it's been, you know, after a certain number of times, it will, if it's got enough data, it will get better and better and better. Okay. So that's supervised AI. Now, if you have unsupervised AI or what they call this generative stuff, that's a little different, right? What it's saying, it's making its own classification as it goes along. For example, you're typing in a thing on your phone, saying, and you see that Google comes up with the next word, okay? This is very close to what the chat GPT does, okay? You give it a prompt, okay? I've written three words. That's a prompt. What's the next word? Right? And so over time, as it records everything you type over and over and over again, okay, its database keeps getting a little bit bigger, right, of things that you, of what words you type, and when you type three words, what's the likely one that's going to come after. So it gets better and better and better, and every time it comes up with a word, and you, that's right, rather than type it, you say, yeah, you click that, yeah, I meant that word. Now you've told it, in a sense, you're supervising it, right? You're saying, that was right, and if I don't pick the word that you came up with for the next word, that's wrong, okay? So it's scoring itself, each time, right? And this is
so. Is it domain? Is it domain specific?
Well, I mean that's it's language in languages. Yeah, in this case, we're talking about languages, words. But remember, language is a big thing, and the really wonderful thing that the OpenAI people figured out how to do was, they said, well, if we're going to figure out the next word, I mean, the next word in English is not going to be the same word as the next word in Spanish or Russian or whatever. And so they took on the task of gathering data from 100 different languages.
100
languages. And at least 50 programming languages, you know, like C or Java or all these different programming languages. And then they say, well, okay, what's going to, now, you know, like in deciding what's a cat and what's not a cat, right? I mean, mm-hmm. the domain is a picture, okay, as an mm-hmm. image. Mm-hmm. You're trying to do what you can with the image. And the unit there of computation is the pixel. Mm-hmm. What's near, what's far, what's connected, what's not. And then, but with language, here's what they came up. This is a brilliant thing they did. They said, you know, you have words, and words sometimes have a little, you know, if they're an adverb, they have add a little ending on it. If they're a verb, they have a little ing, speaking, you know, spoke, all these different versions, right? So they said the unit we're going to use is a part of a word. It might, if it's a small mm-hmm. word, it might be a whole word. But really, it's mm-hmm. and it's also, remember, all words in most languages, with the exception of some ancient Chinese and Arabic ones, are sounds. Mm-hmm. When they mm-hmm. were designed, people said, take a sound and they tried to make a word for it, you know. And so they also mm-hmm. have a huge database of the sounds associated. They call it, I think, phonetics, right? The phoneme, the sound of a unit of a word. And a sound is not quite a, maybe you say the word hour. Well,
hour.
That's one sound, really, okay, pretty much, okay. But if you say hourly, that's two sounds, right, okay. So it's token, it's what do you call it, it's unit of thought, it's unit of analysis is going to be the token, combination sound and a literal word in any language that might be mm-hmm. associated. So you're talking about when I say what word follows this, the difference between ChatGPT and the regular program running on your little cell phone, okay,
cell
typer,
phone. Mm-hmm.
Typer, is that it's saying also what sound follows that. And that allows it to, for some, I you wouldn't think intuitively that would matter, but they discovered that that made a huge difference mm-hmm. in the ultimate, predictiveness, predictive capability.
Predictive.
You know, what is the right completion to your prompt? You ask a question, what's the answer? And it's very powerful. I mean, I'm just learning about that. By the way, there's a course, you don't have to have programming, there's a course you can take on deeplearning.ai. It takes about 30 minutes, and it gives you a little introduction to how this actually works. And it demystifies it a little bit, okay, from some of the hype you're seeing. People are wondering, oh, well, does it tell lies? Well, if you ask it to, it will.
That's a good one.
If you say,
that's pretty good.
You know, tell me a lie. Well, it will. Okay.
It sounds like the human body, man, made up so many different agencies and components and things that operate. Right. According to what you ask it to do, and it'll remember the things for your survival.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. It's so interesting to me how you know everything seems to make sense when it makes sense.
Yeah.
When you get a chance to look at it from an experience point, like
right.
You know, it makes sense. So that computer, thank you for that, John. We
hey, did you ever
more often, man?
Do you remember?
We gotta let you go in the classroom, bro.
Do you remember the movie "The Day the Earth Stood Still"?
I remember that.
There've been a couple of different versions of it. Yeah. Okay, I think the old one
That's the one I remember.
One was Michael Rennie, I think, and a visitor from space, and a robot, right? The name Gort. Okay, and the premise of the both movies, there was one with Keanu Reeves where they made the robot a much more powerful kind of weird thing, but same basic thing. And that is that a spaceship arrives carrying a human-looking messenger, played by Michael Rennie, and a robot, which looked pretty clunky in the old movie, okay, but who was described as, you know, basically the military extension of this visitation, that if you bothered to ignore or be bad, you know, he had the capability to wipe out your planet, okay, and punish you for your sins or whatever. So this drama goes along, and the messenger has interactions with the military and the politicians and the priests and the young people and this and that and other thing, and the robot Gort just sits there by the spaceship not doing much of anything. Well, eventually there's all this uproar, and someone shoots the messenger. You know, Michael Rennie character.
Yeah, I remember.
Remember? It's an accident. All of a sudden, Gort becomes active, right? And runs out and gets out and pick up the messenger. And the heroine, I think, was played. I can't remember the famous actress. I think it was whoever married to Paul Newman, I believe. I can't remember her name right now. But anyway, she's the heroine. And, you know, the robot comes, you know, to pick up the messenger. And she's right there. And he's looking at her. And he's starting his little buzzy light. And she says, oh, no, please tell, you know, your master that it was an accident. You know, we're not like that. Not everybody's like that, you know. And then in the movie, Gort takes the messenger back, fixes him up. Messenger comes back out a little bit and makes a speech. You better learn, otherwise it's going to be hell to pay. Mm-hmm. Well, that movie is taken from a short story written in 1941, right at the beginning of World War II, called Farewell to the Master, by a guy named Harry Bates.
And yeah, I remember that caption somewhere on TV.
And in the original story, it has a very different ending. And the plot twist in the end was rejected by the movie producers of both movies because it was too fearsome or secular, you know, for the public to consume, they thought, as a movie. Because in the movie, the plot is similar until it gets to the end, and except the robot in the story is not a clunky robot. It actually moves like a real entity. Okay, same scene. The heroine says, "Well, please tell your master that it was an accident," and he says, "You don't understand." And she says, "What do you mean?" He says, "I am the master."
I am the master.
Yeah. So, when you think about this AI becoming smarter and smarter and smarter and smarter and smarter, right? It's something to. It would be a mistake to underestimate the power of computation. I will say that. It'd be a mistake to underestimate it, of what it can do. I've heard a lot of people.
Power of computation. That is profound. Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, it would be a mistake to underestimate. Yeah, and we see it. We see what's. You know, did you see the pictures of this guy's bathroom with all the documents? This is such a new horizon for the people of this country.
Amen.
Who during my childhood, we celebrated the very idea of being a part of such a great America, you know.
Yep.
Washington, D.C., you know, when you went there, different kinds of music would play in your ears, like, because that's what we were used to hearing on television and seeing on television. The president, he's going to gather around the television, children. We're going to watch our president. We're going to watch the United States. And it's such a, but for those who've never really experienced that America, the America from the 60s and the 50s and yeah. 70s, you know, there are those Americans who know nothing of that, and they'll never experience that part, thank God, because that's going backwards. But it's those who were back there experiencing it in another level, who were causing it to happen. The things, I mean, all the things that happened to get us to where we are today. They're still stuck back there, but they're running the country. And when you see them, it's like they don't know who to agree with. But we see that they agree with whichever way the wind is blowing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Donald Trump should have been. You see Chris Christie stand up and say he ain't no good. What about him? You know, and it's the money.
Yeah, right. It's
what are we supposed to do? He said, well, I'm sorry. He said, I made a mistake. That's true. You did make a mistake, a big one.
Yeah.
And your parole ain't up yet.
No, not Chris Christie's.
You know, it's with the people, when the people's court, and his Christie's parole, when people do what he did, like this guy, Cohen guy, he wrote this book. He was on television. It looked like he's getting ready to have, to me, he's going to have a stroke.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, did you remember? He was just so animated.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And, but... You know, he's what they call a mouthpiece. I think somebody should stick a mouthpiece in his mouth.
Yeah. Well, you know,
down
whoever, I mean, I watched Trump for, I mean, he used to appear every other week on some of the radio programs in New York, you know, all the time. He was a con man, obviously, you know, from the beginning. I mean, how anyone could have ever bought into the fact that this guy was anything more than just he was never going to tell the truth. He's like the worst example of a successful salesman you could ever come up with. I mean, talk about lying to sell things. He
would be a great, he would be a great guest on our show.
He would.
Or when we give the part about who can tell the biggest lie.
He could just tell them, and we could just laugh, you know.
Man, he would win every time.
Yeah, I would. And you catch him at it, and he's got enough lawyers to...
It wouldn't be fair to know what.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're going to get him. But if they get him, he's going to broadcast from prison.
You know, I remember cocaine. When I used cocaine, it made me... I lied sometimes. Once I figured it out, I said, well, you didn't have to tell a lie, but I lied because I had gotten so used to lying. And I just lied because, and there wasn't nothing to lie about, so I'd make up something so I could tell a lie about her. You know, like, and I usually end up wanting to be the hero in the lie.
Yeah. So, yeah. Right. Of course. You know, as long as you're going to tell a story, come on. You know.
He has a quill. He has a quill that is so quick.
He does. Yeah.
He's gonna call him Quick Quill. A quick quill. He can write. I mean, and the guy just writes lies. He's just fluent. If they ever have they got a job, I forgot, as a professional liar. That's a lawyer, right?
Well, or a,
we used that's to, what they used to say.
In the tech industry, we always used to call the sales guys liars, you know, because they would go out and they didn't usually understand software, but they were salesmen and some company wanted to hire them. So okay,
I got a
Rolodex, you know. I can call my contacts and they go out and sell something that you hadn't really made.
And it's going to kill everybody.
Well, the customer says, well, we'd like a program that does A, B, C, D. Oh, well, ours does that. Yeah.
They go some free ones, by the way.
Right, yeah. Come back.
They go some free ones. They go a free pack. Hey, remember they used to come with the big old clunky briefcase?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
And it opened up, You'd be like, wow, I want one of those cases. You know, in the room, we just said, man, when the insurance man, when he come around with that case again, he getting ready to go up to Miss Fanny's house. We're gonna take that case, man, because we can put all our drugs. You see how that thing open up?
Yeah, right,
oh,
man.
Man,
it's perfect. It's a perfect. Yeah, right, exactly.
It's a display case.
Oh,
so we
man.
Made a plan. We made a plan to rip off the insurance man and his briefcase.
Right.
So we got the briefcase, but we left the $2,000 that he had in his pocket. We left that.
Well, that was probably, probably been better off with the $2,000. But anyway, yeah. Well, I don't know where we're going, pal. I mean, I think some people, when they tell stories, I mean, if you ask them, I had a friend of mine one time who was great at this. I mean, he was a campaigner for the union, and he would say all kinds of shit that wasn't true. And I said, well, why don't you tell the truth? He says, man, I don't know what the truth is.
Maybe we should have a group. Maybe we should have a support group. Or at least a training seminar or something on, you know, how to actually do that. But so, John, we're coming up on 7
a.m. Yeah, we've been...
A.M. And I think it's been a very fruitful...
Oh, I've had fun. I love talking to you, pal. I love talking to you.
Conversation.
I wish you were down here in the area. I miss you.
Yeah, I miss you guys as well, man. I miss you. I miss the caboose, man. We got to put a video or something. I'm going to see if Jay-Z wants to come down. And.
Well, he sleeps in the caboose. Maybe he'll wake up in time.
Maybe I could do a video about somebody escaping on a great train robbery or something. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Maybe we can do a... Or maybe that guy that does the song about "Can't nobody tell me nothing,
right.
You can't tell me nothing." And he's standing up there with his chaps on, with the back out. You know, he got this thing.
Right.
I don't know. He did the. He did
you know
a
the,
song
uh,
that became a hit, and he was on a horse. And oh my goodness!
You know, you so would think things. We would be able to. Charged add the value of that caboose to the house, but it turns out we can't because the forest didn't because it's the insurance companies won't insure home insurance won't insure it because it's
well you ever think about what's the foundation under that
it's not there isn't one
right?
See it's technically it's movable even though it would take 200 tons to move it it's huge in terms of its weight because the guy rebuilt it had been burnt, the original thing, and he put wood and all around it, right? He covered the whole thing with what you see on the outside now is a wood covering over the metal that, or the actual siding.
How heavy is it again? How heavy?
Oh, I think it's 120 tons.
That could be a tourist attraction.
Well, they pulled it in when there's a picture of them on a big crane, okay, that they had it lifted up. They laid track on the little pathway that comes up from that back street into my backyard there, you know, that little there's a little path. They had laid track and rolled it, you know, so they could put it in there like that, okay? And they had to haul it down. It was a big deal, you know, to do it. But turns out it's not insurable because it's technically, it's like you had a mobile home in your backyard. which you can't, a regular homeowners won't cover that either because it's movable. And, you know, I mean, if you're a strict bank, if you're an actual bank that's doing what it's doing and you're saying, well, I'm going to loan you mortgage for your house because I have that house, I have a lien on the house as in case you don't pay the mortgage, right? But you can't put a lien, they won't, you can't put a lien on a movable building the same way as you can on an immovable one. You know, one sitting on a foundation can't be picked up and taken to Idaho. If you had a mobile home in back of you, you know, and you wanted to run away, even though the bank had a lien on that, you can take it all the way to Idaho and they're going to have a harder time collecting on their asset. So actually it's not part of the price of the house either. It's very, mm-hmm. it's very interesting. And when Carol, you know, made the deal. So it's kind of it's a freebie.
Winner.
It was a freebie. Yeah. I mean, it was a really interesting thing. And the guy did it because he was the assistant secretary of transportation under some, all the way back to, I don't know, Kennedy, Eisenhower, somebody way back. And he loved trains, and he found a burnt one, and he got somebody. He had the influence somewhere to get somebody to haul it down and put it in his backyard.
That's what I'm talking about. That's living large, baby. Bring me a train. Hey, John, it's been great, man.
All right, man.
You know, it's been great. It's been a great show. I hope to talk with you soon,
man. All right, pal. Stay in touch. If you're going to come down, let me know, right? Because we got room in the caboose or in the bedroom,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's getting that time of the year too, man. Hey, thanks, John.
Love to see you. All right, man. Take care, man. Bye bye.